Howdy, howdy. This is One Day Closer with Mark and Dave. We are rekindling a spirit of hope and truth in the discussions that's going on in the world and in the news and everywhere. That's what we're doing here, and we are bringing it to you, kind of adding our own little flavor and analysis. The last show, we talked about Eric Metaxas's book.
A little bit, yeah.
And called Letter to the American Church, and it's actually to the pastors more than anybody. But it's a great book. You can find it, a link to it on our website at onedaycloser.biz. And
under resources.
And there's other resources
the
there,
book
too.
The Lion Cub.
Yes. Lion Cub.
Cub. Yeah, and there's a bunch of books out there.
Little can, play on words.
Yeah, a little play. A great book. You can read it in a day.
Yeah, it's not very long at all, and it's full of insights comparing the Germany in 1933 to today, because there's a lot of similarities in how the Christian church especially is not speaking up against evil like they didn't do before Hitler came to power, and the church today is also not speaking up. So he draws a lot of these comparisons. He talks about 18,000 churches that were in Germany. 3,000 were for Hitler and 3,000 were against Hitler, but there was 12,000 in the middle that were just not doing anything.
Sitting on the fence.
They were complying. They were virtue signaling. They were hanging their, you know, putting up the swastika flag outside of their church to say, you know, virtue signal. To the authorities that, we're woke. We're one of you. Don't hurt us.
Yeah.
And instead of speaking up against the evil that was truly going on, because there were some people like Dietrich Bonhoeffer who saw what was going on and was trying to tell everybody, and they basically ignored him. They silenced him. They canceled him like they do today. Mm-hmm. They canceled him back then, and eventually he ended up in a concentration camp, and he was murdered right before the good guys came to free the people from the camp. And so that was just a quick highlight from the last show. And now Dave has read the book again, and he has some more insights that he wants to share, because it's relevant to our time. And we
it's definitely relevant. So it's not a history book, okay? Normally when people go, Germany, Nazi Germany.
Right.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'll be asleep. I'll read that right before I go to bed.
I hate history.
Yeah, I hate history. It's not that. Okay, so maybe the first 40 pages, something like that, where he's teeing up what was happening in Germany, 39, 34, what was happening and how this thing gets started, is very, very interesting. After that, it's all reading the newspaper.
Yeah,
you know, it's all about stuff that happened then and how it relates today. And there's really some good teaching. As a matter of fact, if we have time, we're going to go through the parable of the talent.
Okay.
And everybody's heard that parable, believers, non-believers. I'm sure you've heard that parable, but you haven't heard it from this perspective, would imagine.
Very good.
So in chapter 6, it talked about this thing called the spiral of silence. Now, we've talked about this before. But basically, the author is talking about, you know, the spiral of silence refers to the idea that when people fail to speak, the price to speak rises.
Goes up.
It's harder and harder.
Right.
As the price to speak rises, think COVID for a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, if I speak out against COVID, if I speak out against the big V, I'm going to get canceled.
Right.
As the price to speak rises, fewer speak out.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yep. It says, which further causes the price to continue to rise.
Right.
So that fewer people won't speak out.
Yep.
Until the whole culture or nation becomes silent. That's what happened with Bonhoeffer, the guy that was exposing what was, you know, trying to ask the pastors, seriously?
Wake up.
Wake up. He's a chancellor, but this is what he's trying to do.
Right.
Everybody went, no, he's not.
Well, it's not that bad.
It's not that bad. And so we're doing that during COVID.
Yep.
We were doing that against the vaccine. Now we're doing that against woke. It's just a peaceful protest.
Yeah.
It's just kids tearing down statues. And now the streets are full of Palestinian flags, and we don't even know who they are. They're not our neighbors. They're not our kids.
Yeah, they're trying to stop American traditions like lighting a Christmas tree in New York.
Yeah, kind of. Maybe was weird.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have got to find our voice. Mark and I have said that so many times, it's almost getting old. But contrary to that concept, right, it follows that those who speak out, okay, so if we could find our backbone, yesterday's program, or the program before, was about finding our backbone.
Right.
Not politically. Obviously, they need to find their backbone, too. But it was really about us. If you haven't listened to the last few shows, let me just sum them up this way. We've complained about the politicians, that they need to find their backbone, they need to do a better job, and they all suck. And we've been complaining that the school board's doing its thing, and they're all getting away with stuff, and it sucks. And the holiday weekend, Thanksgiving weekend, we read an article I wrote 8 years or something ago, going, you know what? We can complain about those people all day long, but the person that needs to fight these fights, that fights for your kids, that says no more drag queen, no more Game Boy, no more
transgender.
No more transgender. You're not cutting nothing off, okay? You know, if we don't start taking care of, you know, owning it, you know,
right,
you can't blame anybody. You just need to shut up.
No more racial theory in our schools, thank you.
Yeah, critical race theory. I mean, you, the person on the other side of this microphone, us as parents, we're the ones, and he's going to talk about it in here, that we are the ones. You can't blame the pastors anymore.
Yeah.
You can't blame the culture anymore. If you don't like the culture, if you don't like what the pastors have done or not done, or you don't like what the politicians have done or not done, then you need to do something.
Right.
And you, combined with you and you and you and you and you, becomes a group. You have a mob.
Right.
And now we have a voice.
And power.
And power, which is what these other people are doing. And we're sitting back on the couch going, boy, that looks bad over there. I ain't going outside.
Yeah.
And so we become like these people that have lost our voice.
Yeah.
Right? But he's just saying, it follows that those who speak out make it easier for others to speak out. So if we'll just find our voice, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
It'll be easier for other people to go, yeah, I agree with that. Check this line out. I thought this was a good line. Just as cowardice begets cowardice.
Oh, yeah.
Courage begets courage.
Yep.
Boom.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that part.
And so true, you know. I mean, you can see it when there's a bad guy on a subway and he starts hurting somebody and somebody else steps in. And as soon as one guy steps in, six guys step in. The courage becomes infectious for other people to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Just like if you don't do anything, that's infectious too. And, you know, people take a couple steps back, and then everybody takes a couple steps back, and there's a huge assault, and maybe somebody dies. It's infectious both ways. So be the first. Listeners, be the first to step up, shout out what's wrong, and protect innocence, fight for the truth and for the word of God. Do what's right. You know what's right.
Yeah.
They're doing what's wrong. You know what's wrong. Do something about it.
That's right. So Mark and I are north of 60. Okay?
Yeah.
And so it's a little easier for us. We've had a life. And so some of these people that may be listening to this show, maybe, I don't know, 29 like Bonhoeffer was when he started, or 30. They're raising a family. And they're going, wow, I don't have time to do that. Time to do what? Time to
save your children.
Save your children. time to, I don't know when you want to start.
Right.
Okay. But you're just going to count on somebody else that's older to do, stand up at the school, against the school board. I mean, I don't know what you're waiting for. I'm not going to condemn you. I was involved in my kids' schools, but this kind of stuff wasn't happening.
Right.
If I wanted to go to the school board or go to the teacher's meeting, I could go and I would find out that they're trying to raise money and we're going to have a cookie drive and I'm going to end up buying a bunch of chocolate bars so that we can get new uniforms.
Right.
That was pretty much the extent of life back in the day, right? And it wasn't woke. It yeah. wasn't go broke woke. It wasn't critical race theory. That was not being taught.
No.
It was, so I didn't have, so it was easier for Mark and I to go and get involved because it was more of a family thing. It wasn't a political thing. It right. wasn't a career, potentially career ending thing.
Yeah, there you was know, less cancellation going on.
There was
back
a whole
then.
Lot, right. Yeah. But here's the other side of that. It is what it is.
Yeah.
This is where we are. This is the battlefield. Okay?
Yep.
And it's a lot dirtier. It's a lot nastier where you have to go and fight. You're not fighting for uniforms for your kids. You're fighting for your kids to not be entertained by drag queens, to not be convinced that they should change their gender.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have thunk we would be talking about all this mumbo jumbo? So right. I feel sorry for the parents that have to deal with that. Yeah. And if you go, well, I don't have time to deal with that. Well, then I got news for you. You will deal with it either now or you will deal with it later when your kid comes in and says, hey, I'm changing my gender.
Right.
I've already been on blockers because I didn't have to tell you about it. I've been on doing this for 2 years.
Right.
And you're going to go, what the?
Yeah.
So you better get engaged now.
Right.
If you care. And I'm sorry that that's the battlefield.
Hey, you were born for such a time as this. Everybody was.
That's exactly right.
And this is the time we're living in. So don't be afraid to step up. You are supposed to step up. You're supposed to take the battlefield and fight these spiritual battles and these physical battles with these people in authority who are doing the wrong things.
That's right.
That's right. You know, in my, when I was the I was involved with my kids when they were in school too, and I was on the school board because they went to a charter school, and we did have some issues with kids speaking racist things, kids doing violent things, and the wokeism of that time period was they just wouldn't expel the kid. And I'm sitting on the school board going, why not? Why can't you expel the kid?
Hmm.
He's done violence to our children in this school. Expel him, get rid of him. That was the old remedy.
Yeah.
Well, we can't because he has a right to an education and he can't go to any other schools.
He comes from a single parent home and she works.
We're supposed to feel sorry for him. We're supposed to hold his hand.
There was a thing back then called latchkey kids.
Yeah.
Remember? You had to have after school programs because these kids had nowhere to go.
Right.
They went home by themselves and we couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Right. So expel them during the middle of the day. No, can't do that.
Right.
He's only single parent.
Yeah.
She's working, so we can't send him home. We got to put him over there.
Right. So they graduated him, even though he's a rotten kid. You keep pushing him on to the next grades until
he became a politician, probably.
Or a criminal.
Yeah. Well, one and the same.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he goes on to say in this book, living out our Christian faith is less an issue of what we believe. I thought this was interesting. Mm. It's less an issue of what we believe than it is an issue of in whom do we trust.
Mm. That makes a difference right there.
It does, doesn't
yeah.
it? Because yeah. it's not about I've got to communicate to people at the school or to the government or to people at my work that my belief is the only right belief.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which is what they're trying to shove down our throat.
Right.
It's more about they need to know who I trust in. And I need to know who I trust in. And so it goes, I thought it was interesting because this is parallel to that article I wrote that we read, on Thanksgiving? It was our Thanksgiving show.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about what are we fighting for, but it's more about who are we living for?
Yes.
And why?
Yeah, same concept.
Same concept, just a different spin on it. You know, this whole thing about what are we supposed to do? I find this just absolutely fascinating. Now, maybe when I was younger, maybe not so much. I don't know. I was thinking about this the other day. I had the privilege of learning from a lot of different preachers, teachers, right? I was raised Southern Baptist, I knew everything you need to know about hail.
Hail,
and
yes.
If you didn't get down in the front, boy, you know, every Sunday, you might just fall through a crack and go to hell.
Yep.
You know?
Fire and brimstone.
Fire and brimstone. And my grandfather was a Southern Baptist preacher. But when I got decided, okay, I got to find something else, and met my wife and all that, we tried Presbyterian, Lutheran, Assembly of God, Charismatic.
Mm.
I was a charismatic.
Snake charmers.
You know what? You're sick. You're sick. You know, once my daughter actually bought me a book when, you know, we for Christmas or something.
Yeah.
And that was it. On the front of the book, it was something about snake charmers. And I went, seriously, that's what you think our religion's all about? Come on, man. And so anyway, but no, I learned most
but
of my...
You tried them all. Yeah.
I tried a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. And I found that most of my charismatic years is where I learned the power scriptures.
Mm.
How do you sync up power scriptures from one chapter to from an Old Testament to a New Testament, and how do they connect? And I learned that under a charismatic leadership.
There's a lot of good things in those churches.
And to speak authority,
yeah,
and to know your position in Christ, and less about the Bible lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to take that new intel,
mm-hmm,
and I applied it to, boy, what did I learn in Sunday school when I was Southern Baptist about Joshua and David and Goliath? And right, I started to meld those stories together because those were just nice little stories, real
right,
stories,
right,
but they were told in such a way that this is what you need to grow up to be like.
Yes.
But you were too young to understand. How the hell do you do that?
Yeah, it was a child's perspective.
It was right, a child's perspective. So how do you go about doing that? What does it really mean?
Right.
Go check on your brothers. What did that look like? So when I got older, I go, all right, well, that was about 15 miles away. And he put a backpack of cheese on his back. And he went up and his instructions were check on your brothers. See mm-hmm how the war is going.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. I wasn't on CNN.
Right.
Couldn't do it that way. And he gets up there and sees this Goliath guy.
Right.
And so where did he get the boldness to say, who's the uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? I mean, what's the matter with you jackwagons around here? There's 40,000 people all dressed up like army men. I mean, what is your problem? You're going to let him talk to you like that?
Yeah.
He was just a shepherd boy. But that is what he heard when he showed up on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And he got ticked off about it,
mm-hmm,
and said something. And everybody started to go, shh. And then he heard that, you know, hey, Saul's going to do something really good for the guy that's got the kahunis,
mm-hmm,
to go take on the big guy.
Yep.
And he did. And that's the story of David. But you don't hear that.
He had the courage to do that because he spent a lot of time in the shepherd fields with God.
That's right.
He was talking with God.
That's right.
Looking at God's creation, contemplating all that.
Well, he killed a lion and he killed a bear and he protected the sheep. And so he had a little resume.
He had some experience too. Yep.
And when they called him up to Saul's tent, you know, he gave his resume to Saul. And Saul's right, just looking at him going, you're just a kid.
He's a big guy.
Here, you want to try on my armor?
Yeah.
And that didn't work.
Right.
He went with his five stones and took off.
Yeah.
And there's just so much you can learn from those old stories now that you're older.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what I'm getting at. And now that you know other scriptures, right?
Cool.
Joshua being strong, be strong and courageous. Fear not, don't tremble.
Yeah.
I'm with you wherever you go. Well, all we're doing, Lord, is encircling this wall here seven times. So I really don't need you much. I don't know what you mean by courage, right? Until the walls came tumbling down. And then all of a sudden you go, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
He needed courage.
Well, it was God who told him to circle the walls.
That's right.
Right.
And he needed courage because he was now the new Moses.
Mm-hmm.
He took Moses' place.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got millions of people following him and counting on him to go into the promised land, which they don't even own. You know, they don't. But they're told, this is yours.
Right.
There's people over there, but that's okay. It's yours.
God is with you. Yep, you can go.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, hey, let's take a little break here, and we'll talk more about the book that Jeff Eric Metaxas did.
Did we get off track or what?
You've already won.
Amen. We are fighting the battle that the good Lord has already won. To kind of put a cap on your last point there, I want to read a paragraph here, just a couple sentences from page 127 of the book. This is the Eric Metaxas book called Letter to the American Church. He says, we have come to that place in history now, and the Lord looks to us, the American church. We will be his people now, as the world looks to us in the midst of madness, right? That's what's going on, just madness everywhere. And God's looking to the church. He says, our Bible studies and sermons have all been meaningless, hello, if we do not make what we learn come alive in ways that are self-sacrificial. And that show we really do know that God has defeated death. Like the song just said, yes. God has already won.
Absolutely.
If we live like that, then our behavior is going to be different than perhaps what it is right now. Right? So he also talks about the letters of the talents. Dave said we were going to talk about that. And that starts on page 112. If you got the book, he starts the chapter with the whole parable of the talents. And that's basically the parable where three servants are given talents and two servants invest the talents, which is money back in the days of the Bible times. They invest the money, but one servant does not invest the money. And the one who does not invest, who does not try to improve the return on the money that was given to him, he is roundly condemned by Jesus.
I think a lot of people that read that parable when you were younger, you kind of go, well, what's the point here? I want to be the guy that gets 10 talents. I could make a lot of money if I had 10 talents.
Yeah.
Right? And so you had, and it just seems so unfair. You should turn the other cheek. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Number three didn't get very much.
Yeah.
He only had one talent. That's not fair. You guys need to divide that all up. Come on, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not...
Marxism.
But, yeah, right. Right. And Jesus was saying, no. Here's the point of the talent. It's not, did you invest it wisely and buy some gold,
mm-hmm.
right? Or did you prep? What'd you do? Right? It's, what did you not do?
That's
the story of this parable, is that Jesus made it very clear that the servants had to take a risk. Giving you something for free, a gift. Three of you jackwagons, stand up here. I'm getting ready to go somewhere.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to give you a little bit of money to do something, right? And mm-hmm. and so here, this is a gift.
Yeah. Right?
That remember that. That's a gift.
Yep, the gift.
They called it a talent because that was like a quarter or a dollar. That's what they called the money back then. That amount, that denomination was called a talent.
Right,
I think it's odd and interesting and funny that is also, that talent is a gift, your skill set.
Yeah. It has a different meaning today.
A blessing. it has a different message, right? And so Jesus makes it plain that those servants who risked their talent,
mm-hmm.
right, that were given, they were given a reward at the end. But the one that didn't, the servant who played it safe,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to lose my boss's talent.
Yep.
I'm going to bury it in the ground. The ones that played it safe was condemned, like you just said. And it goes on to say, all three had a talent or a bundle of talent given to them.
Mm-hmm.
All three of the parable had a risk to deploy. It was a risk, period.
Right.
You can invest 10 and lose it all, and you risk being beaten up badly by your master. I lost it all. I went to Vegas.
That's the risk. But,
right, that's the risk.
But if the master is a good master, a loving master, you know that wouldn't happen.
Oh.
So how well do you know your master?
There you go.
Right?
Remember the other day you asked, do you feel like he's a harsh judge?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you feel like he's a loving father?
Yes.
Right? You have to know.
That's the point. And I mean, I wished it would have said this in the parable, and it didn't. But I really do think that if you would have risked your talents and lost, the Father still would not have condemned you because you were out there taking the risk and trying to make a difference.
Yeah.
You were trying to improve the situation. The one who gets condemned, who was the one sitting on the fence just being real conservative, who just buried the money and said, when the master came back, he said, here's your money back. I protected it. And he's like, that's not enough, buddy.
That ain't it.
That's not enough.
That's not it. Burying it was not doing something.
Yeah, that's the point.
That's the point.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I didn't give it to you to sit on it. You know what? If Billy Graham, let's just go back a day.
Oh, yeah.
If Billy Graham had been given the gifts that he got, right, the talent to be able to talk to 80,000 people every week, mm-hmm. every age, every denomination, every race, mm-hmm. and he gave them the same message regardless of what town he was in or country he was in, right? That's a gift. That's a talent.
Yep.
Right? If he had not used that, none of those people would have found Christ.
Yeah.
We would never have the story of Billy Graham.
Imagine that. That is a lot of people that would not have been affected in a positive way.
That's right.
That's phenomenal.
If Martin Luther King had decided, I'm not leading nothing.
Right.
I only care. I'm only worried about me and mine.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
He had a gift of, I understand. I am black. I'm with you. But we got to do this in a Christian way. We can't burn stuff down, or we're guilty of what they say we're doing.
Yeah.
We got to find another way. And he paid the ultimate price.
Did you know that when Martin Luther King went to make his famous speech in Washington, you know, there was 100, 200,000 people on the Washington Mall. And he first gets up there, and his speech was kind of falling flat. People weren't reacting. He wasn't getting any feedback from
the crowd. Till he woke up from a dream.
And then there was the friend of his in the audience, and he just hollered out, Martin, tell us about the dream. Tell us about the dream. I have a dream.
Yeah, there you go. All of a sudden, everybody's in.
And so it came about spontaneously. It wasn't even part of Martin's plan, but God had another plan, and it became one of the most famous speeches in history.
Absolutely.
Because that's the way God works. You know, God often just pushes our plans aside, says, I got something better. If you just listen to me, follow my directions, then we're going to get somewhere a lot better than where you thought we were going.
Yep.
Yep.
That's
Isn't
exactly
that cool?
right. So that's some good stuff.
That's right. And there's a lot of parables like that, you know. In Jesus's parables, Metaxas says on page 114, the parables, they force us to see ourselves, and it forces us to declare ourselves. What are we going to declare, right? Whose side are we on? We have only the two choices. There is no middle ground.
That's right.
There's no sitting on the fence like we've been saying, right? There's no middle ground. The parables are telling us that we have to choose good or evil. In a nutshell, he also tells us on page 118 that being a Christian is not about avoiding sin. I mean, not that we should, but being a Christian is about passionately and courageously serving God.
Yeah.
That's the difference. That's the focus. If we're serving God, we're not going to want to sin, right? And go down the bad path. But if we're passionately and courageously serving God, then we will do the right things, like exposing evil and all the things we talk about on this show.
Yeah, and you know what? There's a whole chapter in here. We only kind of hit it briefly, but I think it was good. And it was, you brought it up a week or so ago, about do you believe God is a harsh judge?
Right, like we were saying.
Right, or a loving father?
Yeah.
Because if you figure that out, then you will, and let's say you think God's a harsh judge.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to look at the scriptures, wow, they may not have a lot of power for you because you don't feel worthy.
Right.
If you go, no, I see him as a loving father. I've studied it enough. I've read enough. And I believe that even if I make a mistake, that's the one theme about this book.
Yes.
Bonhoeffer came to the point where he believed that if he stands up against this, you know, and exposes all this in front of all the German population, the entire elite community, I mean, he gave a speech in whatever year that was, 1933, at the Reformed Church, where everybody, that's where you want to be.
Right.
Just when he announced, you know, what he had to say as a 29-year-old, believe it or not.
Wow.
But he knew that if he will stand, and even if he's wrong, God will love him.
Yeah.
God will bless it. Even if he's wrong. And that's a deep understanding of Christ.
That goes against our subconscious here in America. We feel like if we make a mistake, then we're going to be condemned. But that's not true.
But you have to get that in your head.
Yeah, and you have to take the risk.
Right. But that's the journey.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the journey. This doesn't happen overnight. Listen, you've been at this, what, 30, 40 years?
Mm-hmm.
I've been at this. Yeah, I don't know, 40 plus, something like that.
Right.
Hearing the Bible long before all that, mm-hmm. Southern Baptist preacher and all. But 40 years is all I'm counting as to when I said, I'll take responsibility.
Yes.
I'm going to try to learn it and grow. So 40 years you do this, and you get to the point where you're still asking questions like you and I are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do I think he's harsh, or do I think, even if I'm wrong about the predictions we made about the war, if we got our little history lesson off about Canaan just a little bit, I doubt we did. But, I mean, if we did, God forgives.
Right.
Because our intent is right. Our mission is right. Our heart is right. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Well, very good. Hey.
Take a deep breath. Keep the faith. Get in the Word. Get in the Word. That's kind of critical. And remember, we are one day closer. We all have a job to do until we don't.
Somebody with a hurt that I could have helped. Somebody with a hand that I could have held. When I just can't see past myself, Lord, help me be a little more like mercy, a little more like grace, a little more like kindness, goodness, love and faith, a little more. A little less like me.